Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. For the past several months, there has been discussion in Pitkin County among elected officials about how dangerous marijuana edibles are. They are considering a ban on them, but how likely that is debatable.
Certainly, they're not finding any concrete evidence that marijuana edibles lead to tragic events here in our valley at this point.
In Glenwood Springs, a new detour will be established to cross over the river while the Grand Avenue Bridge is being rebuilt. It's sure to cause serious traffic problems.
So what we will get is sort of hell light. We'll get what it is like to have all of those cars in one place.
Meanwhile, in Rifle, a woman has opened a cuddling business. Over in Basalt, they may need a big group hug as politics continues to pit residents against each other.
Basalt in general is having an overall nervous breakdown. It's having a meltdown.
Finally, an inmate at Pitkin County Jail caused about $50,000 in damage and forced the 911 communications center to relocate.
The person had a great deal of strength. It took three or four strong law enforcement officers to get it to subdue him.
Joining me this week are Chad Abraham, reporter for the Aspen Times, Jeannie McGovern, editor of the Aspen Times Weekly, Randy Essex, publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent, and Andy Stone, columnist for the Aspen Times. Thank you for coming in, and Randy on the phone.
Great to be here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Jeannie, you have a story in the Aspen Times Weekly from Jason Auslander about weed. Or about gummy bears. The cover looks like you're vilifying the gummy bear.
We're not vilifying the gummy bear, but we are talking about edibles. And it's kind of banked off a discussion that started back in March between county officials, the sheriff, about whether we have an edibles problem and perhaps they need to be banned in the county. Jason took a little bit of a deeper look and found that maybe that's not so much the case.
Yeah, having read the article, it looks like the sheriff is saying, well, we really don't have that many cases of overdoses in the hospital, and he's part of a Marijuana Valley, what is it, Marijuana Valley Council?
Council, yeah.
And they're looking for a recommendation, the county is, I think, about what to do about it. And he's saying, well, probably nothing.
Exactly. I mean, but he found in his research, and I think Jason found when he talked to people involved in this issue, is that edibles are no more of a problem than probably any kind of marijuana. And the numbers, if you just look at the stats, are so low as to, quote, poisoning, that it led them to wonder, does it justify a ban on them?
And that's what the county commissioners are asking.
That is what right. The county commissioners are wondering if they need to do. Just based on the number of applications to do, you know, production facilities out at the Airport Business Center and other places in town. What I found really interesting as both a parent of teenagers and, you know, a journalist who's kind of covered the pot movement since it began, is that both Theron Mulberry, principal at Aspen High School, and Lori Mueller, who's the director of Youth Zone, you know, obviously intimately involved in kids' lives and how pot affects them, both saying that they don't see edibles as the biggest problem when it comes to marijuana.
I love that quote from Lori that was in the story where she said, most of the kids we see are using marijuana. They just prefer to smoke it. So that's...
They're looking for an instant high. And they I like the portion about they don't want to wait an hour. And I think one of my main takeaways from that article is... I'm glad that we have officials with a pragmatic nature like Joe. I think he's thinking, let's not fix something that isn't broken.
Right. I mean, and as a cops and courts reporter, you're not seeing a lot of calls for service that are related to overdoses of marijuana, right?
I mean, no, I can't. I think maybe twice in the past 2 years, maybe I've heard a scanner call about it, but I don't think it's very prevalent.
At the same time, if to take a slightly different angle on it, I understand that, and I agree that it's probably not the danger that some people seem to want to paint it as, but I think it raises a question as to why do we really need everything in the world infused with marijuana. Why do we have to have marijuana candy and marijuana cookies and marijuana beef jerky as well? It seems a curious development in the market that it should take that approach.
Which is kind of one of the things that prompted this story, at least in Jason's mind. He found it really interesting that everything was infused with marijuana, so why don't we just pop a pill?
Exactly.
Just like another type of pill. And what he reported in the story, and I think is sort of the running thought, is that the marijuana experience is just that, an experience. So we're having beef jerky and a glass of wine to experience that. That's what
it's like handing a joint to your...
People are sitting down around a table and sharing gummy bears. It doesn't seem like a very social sort of thing to, let's have a piece of candy, but not two.
But the other main takeaway is parental responsibility. If you're going to choose to buy that, you have to put it up on a top shelf, hidden away. It seemed like from Jason's reporting that the Denver cases were easy access for toddlers, that sort of thing.
Well, the majority of cases that they see in the Denver hospitals are kids in that, under 10 category, who clearly aren't looking necessarily to get high. They're just looking at something that looks yummy. Even the new regulations that are coming into play where things are going to be stamped, gummy bears actually will no longer be manufactured. They'll be like gummy discs. But hey, a big red gummy chewy disc.
Right.
That looks great.
This sort of overlaps a much larger question, which is we talk about all the toddlers who have access to guns and are shooting themselves and other family members. I mean, there's something there that people are not being careful with almost anything, whether it's guns or gummy or marijuana-laced gummy bears. I mean, I think there's a level of personal responsibility, as you said, Chad, that sort of needs to move up here. But I don't know whether we count on people to show that level of responsibility.
And I also think Joe's point is well taken about the number of alcohol detox patients. We're not moving to ban alcohol.
One would argue that alcohol is more dangerous than pot. You don't see a lot of domestic violence cases from people being high. It's usually they're drunk. Randy, you've had a lot of debate down there with the marijuana industry. Has this ever come up at the county level or the Glenwood City Council level?
The only times that edibles have come into the conversation was last year there was an application initially approved under the old rules, and it kind of sparked Glenwood Springs to review its rules. There was going to be a retail store and edibles in infusion kitchen right here on Main Street, and I actually think that was a little bit of a tipping point for some of the council members to think, yeah, maybe we're going a little bit too far. In terms of abuse of edibles or any of the instances of kids finding them and eating them, we haven't had that here.
And same with along the I-70 corridor in the North Fork Valley, rifle and
battle. Yeah, we haven't heard anything along those lines.
Right.
There was the one instance at Coleridge High School the winter of 2015 where a guy who told the police he wanted to be an entrepreneur and show his business skills got an older cousin, I believe, to go to a pot store and buy some edibles that he was then distributing at school. And a girl ate a cookie and got sick. Yeah, I guess we did have that instance, which is the opponent's nightmare, where you have marijuana-infused candy at school.
Yeah. So did it come out in the article that they're going to make a recommendation that there is nothing to do?
No, they didn't Joe didn't sum up where they're going with it, but I think
reading between the lines what it seemed like to me.
Yeah, reading between the lines, certainly they're not finding any concrete evidence that, marijuana edibles lead to, tragic events here in our valley at this point. So I think that, like Chad said, that we have some pragmatic leaders here, both in the education community and in law enforcement and at the county level, to look at, is just a ban the right solution, or do we need to be looking underneath the problem, like Andy suggested, at all the reasons we might be seeing kids getting their hands on edibles, as well as other things. I think it's going to, my personal opinion, it's probably going to lead to a broader conversation about safety in our valley related to marijuana of all types and other things.
But it also sounded like kids are not getting their hands on it.
Not to a great degree, at least according to, you know, the statistics. Now, every kid who's ingested an edible isn't going to the hospital, so we don't know that. But again, you know, when you're looking at that kind of younger set, they're not seeing it. Those are the kids who are probably going to land in the hospital. The older set of kids, as Lori Mueller pointed out, they're probably getting high in other ways than edibles.
There was a guy who was like 65 or 70 that got passed out in the music tent, I think it was last year, because he overdosed on edibles. Remember that?
I do remember that. Yeah, that was...
We do have a chart with Jason's story that you should all check out that points out exactly the age breakdown of those admitted to the hospital. And yeah, that's a surprising number, is the number of over 65.
Well, again, that tends to, I'm just guessing here, but that would probably people who haven't had all that experience, and here they are in Colorado and they want to try it, and so they don't want to smoke, which is just a terrible thing to do, so they eat a cookie or they eat some other form. And again, as people probably know and should know, when you eat marijuana, it takes much longer to come on, and then it can be much stronger and last much longer. That's why, I mean, smoking is arguably a superior delivery system. That's speaking as an old-time doper.
And that's also why Joe has proposed, and I think the article said that Native Roots does do this, a tips-like program to warn people.
They do, and the guy from Native Roots, who Jason spoke with, really outlined in the story their sort of message to buyers, and that education is at the forefront of what they're trying to do when people come in to buy edibles, because most people have no idea what they're getting into.
This is Valley Roundup, a weekly media roundtable of analysis and commentary with writers and editors. I'm Carolyn Sackriason. We now continue our discussion about the state of affairs in Glenwood Springs and an update on the Grand Avenue Bridge project. Well, they might want to take an edible before they go through Glenwood to get over the detour for the bridge. Randy, give us...
Not driving, of course.
Oh, right, of course. If you're a passenger in a vehicle when you need to go over the bridge in Glenwood, Randy, what's the update for the...
So what's going to happen in October is that the 8th Street Bridge, which is just west of downtown and connects with Midland Avenue, is going to be closed while CDOT gets it ready to be a part of the detour that we'll use when the Grand Avenue Bridge is closed a year from now, going into December of 2017, January of 2018. So right now, traffic in Glenwood, about 80% of the cars that cross the river or that cross into downtown take the Grand Avenue Bridge, which makes sense, and 20% take the 8th Street Bridge. So what we will get is sort of hell light. We'll get what it is like to have all of those cars in one place. And for 10 days in October, everybody will have to go over the Grand Avenue Bridge, or we'll have to take Midland Avenue, which is kind of decrepit and needs repairs. So I think it'll be a wake-up for both organizations that need to get employees across the river. And, you know, look, this isn't a Glenwood issue. There are 10,000 people who drive to work in Aspen every day, and a whole lot of them come over that bridge. So employers in Aspen who maybe haven't thought about changing shifts or group transportation are probably going to have employees who are late through no fault of the employees. And I think that we'll start to see, you know, people pulling their hair out and getting angry as they try to go through Glenwood during that period of time. Right now, the Grand Avenue Bridge is having one-lane closures going down valley toward the interstate during the day before the bigger rush starts, and we'll see traffic backed up, you know, four or five blocks on Grand Avenue in town.
And does that include then the trucks, the delivery trucks will also go down that detour Is that road right. can handle that's, that kind of
that's what's going to happen.
Heavy vehicles?
Yeah.
Randy, do you think there's a danger of traffic eventually backing up onto I-70?
That's a good question.
I think that's a danger. When the bridge is closed, people will have to take the West Glenwood exit, and that has been improved. They've widened a roundabout there to try to deal with that specific issue. So CDOT and the transportation planners recognize what you just said as a possibility. And the other kind of surprising factor in this is that traffic counts this summer have been up. And we had a story, I can't remember the exact percentage, but have been up not an insignificant amount. So the bridge project planners are saying, well, we have to reduce traffic a year from now. A year from now, the Grand Avenue Bridge is going to be closed. We have to reduce traffic through Glenwood Springs 20%. It's not going to happen. I mean,
no.
Now it would have to be maybe 30% because traffic is up this year, and people are going to be sitting in their cars. There are going to be a lot of just a whole lot of headaches and difficulties. Maybe people will start to take the bus after they have been in their car for a while.
How much will that really help? I mean, you still got to sit in the, if it's a detour, right? I mean, there's not a bus lane in the detour.
No, exactly. I mean,
just fewer cars.
If you got 8,000 people to take the bus, then, you know, you could have an impact. But
that'd be a mighty big bus.
I don't know if Rafta has that many buses. So.
Right. Well, when you get on the other side of all this, you're going to need maybe some cuddling.
Oh, yeah. So
you can just drive on down a rifle and get...
2 years ago,
please tell us about this story.
Shooter's Grill and Rifle, where the servers open carry loaded guns. And I thought that the story about the cuddling business in Rifle called Touched, which offers platonic cuddling and hugging, was sort of the anti-shooters. All the great stories are in Rifle, right?
Apparently.
I guess so.
You can go get a hug, and then you can go get breakfast at a place where the servers pack in a Ruger. The business owner, this is a thing. We found people nationally who consider themselves professional cuddlers, and the business owner herself, who at the time of the story hadn't had a customer yet but had a storefront, hadn't said it's weird, but it cuddling, hugging reduces stress.
She said something in the article that she recognizes that it's hard concept for people to get their heads around, and she was hoping that she could break down that barrier. I mean, I'm looking at everybody's faces here in the studio, and I think they look a little mortified. Would you go in and pay for it?
With the levels of cuddling that struck me as interesting, you know, the platonic, not where your bathing suit goes, cuddling. The couples cuddling, what's that? And who's the other one in the couple? Just a little awkward.
What is the pricing
system?
Maybe
this business could make it in Boulder or Carbondale.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure about Rifle. You know, look at all the free media that she's getting, though. It's like Donald Trump.
Yeah. When did she open that business?
Within the last month.
And no customers yet.
Well, we don't know. When did you do the story? Last week?
Story ran Friday or Saturday.
So we'll see, you know. Maybe just go down there and check it out.
Maybe she's onto something.
Well, you said it, you know, might do better in Boulder or Carbondale. I'm thinking maybe Basalt. They all need a big group hug down there.
They are having a group freak out down there.
Right. So the latest is in Wednesday's papers and on this station. We had a story about how the council is finally providing some direction on the Pan and Fork parcel, and they're going to ask two bond questions on the November ballot. They have to make the final decision next Tuesday. One will be for a scaled back park version where they need $4 million bucks, and then they're asking the voters to buy the 2.3-acre parcel from the Community Development Corporation that owns that piece of land. And so they would ask for $7 million in bonds. So they're going to do this amidst a lot of scrutiny on their transparency or lack thereof. They have had a lot of executive sessions since the beginning of the year. The Aspen Times quoted 24. The town clerk thinks that's wrong because you have to look at the actual minutes to see when they, if they did go in instead of what was listed on the agenda. But regardless, it's a lot, and it's a lot more than most governments. So, Andy, you're an observer of this government. And
well, you know, let me... Certainly the executive session, by the way, that term executive session, it's a secret meeting. Let's call it that.
And Bill Dunaway, from the Times, he hated those things.
Oh, he fought them tooth and nail. Yeah. And back when he first took over the Aspen Times in the 50s, the city council would routinely just throw everybody out and, you know, have discussions and make decisions. And Bill kept protesting because it was either illegal or certainly unethical, and I don't know what the exact laws were at that point governing. But
and that's what the residents are exactly doing in Basalt.
Exactly.
And they finally said, okay, we'll back off and we'll pare down the amount of them.
As they should.
As they very well should. I mean, there's no question, both legally and ethically and in terms of good government, those meetings need to be open as much as possible. And again, I think this is sort of reflecting two things. One is the fact that the town attorney, Tom Smith, like perhaps most lawyers, would like to have things done in private because that's a good way to operate. And the council is not showing sufficient courage or leadership to stand up and say, no, we're going to have this discussion in public. It's public business. We understand Councillor Smith telling us that that we can go into executive session, but it's wrong for them to do that. And they need to show the character to stop it. And maybe they're going to.
And Mark Kittle is one of the councilmen, and he did do exactly that last week. And he stood up and said, I'm not going to participate in this. So
would they have done that had not so many people spoken up?
No, absolutely not. And now, so this is all, I think, part of the lead up to the April election, which was really contentious. And a citizen did a CORA request, a Colorado Opens Record Act request, for the text messages between the mayor and the town clerk. Since then, that town clerk is being inundated with CORA requests. So I've asked for a few things. And the town clerk got back to me and she said, you know, I am so busy with everybody else's requests, plus the job that I have, which is huge. You know, she's the town clerk. She's got to deal with all of the council's agendas and everything else. She said, you know, you're not going to get this in 3 days. It's going to be like 9. Mm. And I asked her how many requests she's got in front of her, and she's got like a dozen. One thing I've seen change as a journalist over the years is now we're charged for this public information. So the town of Basalt charges $30 an hour for staff time.
Wow.
And 25 cents a page.
Wow.
So is that really public?
Does that make it accessible to the public? Because that's limiting.
Right.
Especially to some citizen grassroots effort to get that information.
Yes.
And I think the volume of CORA requests perhaps speaks to the 50,000 foot question of what's going on with Basalt's future. You know, a key element in the election was the downtown is deteriorating, Willits is booming, and I think that river park parcel is crucial to the town's future, and that's why everybody's up in arms.
Yep.
But none of them can agree on what to do with it to solve that crucial problem.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. We now continue our discussion about Basalt politics.
I think Chad's, you know, pointing out something good here, which is that Basalt in general is having an overall nervous breakdown. It's having a meltdown. As you said, they could use a group hug. It feels as if it dates back at least to this entire thing with the Riverside Park. Suddenly there was this great piece of land, and they've been fighting over that ever since. It poisoned this last election. It poisoned the aftermath of the election. It's what led to, as you said, the lawsuit and that CORA request. And so now there's a whole new flock of CORA requests, and the town manager has quit, and that's part of that same. Everything is falling apart there. It seems as if actually every town in this valley occasionally has its little moments like that. Snowmass had one, if you remember, people, council members fighting each other and marching out of meetings. Aspen, God knows, has them all the time with, in fact, a citizens' rebellion a couple of years ago to slap the council down. Glenwood has had them with vicious fight. Every once in a while, every town just suddenly falls apart for a little while.
Sometimes you got to get all the way to the bottom before you go back up. That's the case for individuals and town governments, apparently.
Rock bottom.
Yeah. I mean, Randy, do you kind of have that kind of drama in Garfield County or Glenwood?
We have much less of it.
In Carbondale, too?
I think Carbondale has the potential to get there. It has its moments now and again. But generally speaking, it's not nearly so dramatic.
Well, actually, Carbondale just in this last week has had a little bit of nastiness coming out. There was the town council meeting at which women were bringing up their concerns with some assaults, and they were afraid to walk around after dark. And then one fellow who wants to run for mayor wrote a letter to the editor criticizing what the incumbent mayor and council had done, and then several other former council members, I think, they all wrote a letter to the editor attacking the candidate for mayor. Once again, it's suddenly getting ugly.
Yeah, and I was, Andy, specifically thinking of instances like that come up now and again. I don't want to talk about any candidate in particular, but you know, I think Ed Cortez saw that meeting as an opportunity to get some headlines for his campaign. And in a sense, it worked.
Right. It did. You know, we get manipulated. We know it. But sometimes you got to fill the space, right?
Well, you know, it's a letter to the editor. I mean, I let people write letters to the editor, although we do limit, you know, how often candidates will write.
Right. One final story that I want to talk about really quick is, Chad, you did a story. You've done a couple. There's been at least two jail thrashings now, right?
Correct.
Pitkin County's jail has been getting just beat up. First, there was another meltdown from a town councilman in Snowmass who you know, vandalized the jail, and now there's a recent one.
Yeah, there was a man suspected of possessing and potentially using methamphetamine. The police report said he had it in his pocket. He admitted to having it. And Joe DeSalvo, I wanted to know how this person was able to damage two sprinkler heads. He damaged one and then was relocated to another cell where he damaged another one. And I asked Joe, you know, I assume you have security cameras. How was he allowed to do this? And Joe said, we only had one person on duty that night. And I'm not going to send that, you know, the protocol is not to send that person in by themselves. And by the time he had called for backup deputies and I think an Aspen police officer, the damage had been done. Water was spraying everywhere. And then when they did go in to get him, which I think is somewhat typical of methamphetamine use, the person had a great deal of strength. It took, I think, three or four strong law enforcement officers to subdue him.
How much damage?
They said at least $50,000. That's the price of a new server. They're still calculating the other damages.
And that's far more than what? What's the town councilman's name?
Chris Jacobson.
Yeah, Chris Jacobson.
You know, and I don't have the number.
It's like $14,000, I think.
Yeah.
He ripped like chairs out of the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy got lucky, if that's the word, managed to flood out the electronics on the floor below. So that's why his bill went up.
Yep. Yep.
Chris was perhaps more effective in actually damaging the cell itself, and so he deserves recognition for that.
But I don't think anybody had any idea that this was going to flood the 911 communications center and force it to relocate 2 weeks early.
Right. Well, that's all the time we've got, so thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
Thanks.
That was Chad Abraham, reporter for the Aspen Daily News, Randy Essex, publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Andy Stone, columnist for the Aspen Times, and Jeannie McGovern, editor of the Aspen Times Weekly. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can also get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.